Let's smash things up.
Every Saturday from noon to 1 p.m., listen to Generation Annihilation on CITR 101.9 FM, UBC Radio in Vancouver.
Yeah.
welcome to a very special Inksteads, where today we are celebrating International Women's Day by having a conversation with Britta Gregory. I record this on Saturday with some minor technical difficulties, but I think overall it sounds like a really good interview. Roberta, the reason I chose her is because she kind of plays a role in women in comics. Her series Naughty Bits, I think, is very influential as far as setting a standard for women to really get into comics and young ladies to really see someone taking a comic and really being really active, really political with it, making it funny, but overall really like setting a precedence of excellence. There we go. It's a great series. I love Naughty Bits, and she has a whole whack of other stuff. You can check out her website at robertagregory.com. I'm also going to suggest, if you're interested in checking out more comics by women, there's two anthologies I highly recommend. One is Scheherazade, which is put together by Megan Kelso, which has some greats like Gabrielle Bell, Andres Arp, local Amy Lockhart, Ariel Bordeaux, Ellen Forney, Kelly Seda, Gabrielle Bell, and of course Megan Kelso. It's an awesome anthology of more recent women doing comics. I also recommend the Twisted Sisters anthology, which is more 90s women in art or in comics, put together by Diane Newman in remembrance of her great series Twisted Sisters, with people like Mary Fleener, Julie Doucette, Aline Kaminsky Crum, Phoebe Glockner, Dori Seda. It's a great collection. Both, I think, are really good ways of getting into women that are doing great comics. To kind of further this throughout the month, I'm going to do interviews with more great female creators, including Gabrielle Bell and Liz Prince, who are both really recent. Liz more recent than Gabrielle. Gabrielle's been doing it a couple of years now, but both are still in the undercurrent, and I think they're just great, great artists who really set a great standard for doing great comics.
Love you. Do you really love me?
Thank you for joining us.
Wait.
I want to say hi. Hi, Roberta.
Hi. Hello.
We're both big fans of your work, and
thank you. Thank you.
I was planning out this month for the Ink Stud Show, doing for March, doing Women in Comics, because March 8th is International Women's Day, and so we're going to air this on March 8th for International Women's Day, because we both feel that really, like, your work kind of has a role of that kind of feminism in comics that's very open about it. And I think it's really, influential on setting, I don't know, like, something for other female women cartoonists to follow.
We also both feel that you're an international woman.
Cool. Oh, excellent. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, there was a, I think another Bitchy collection came out in Swedish, I think, like, not too long ago.
The Swedes love their comics.
They do, yeah. I'm not sure how much they love my comics. I'm not sure how well they sell, but at least it's available. So, you know, part of being creative is just getting it out there and then sort of seeing what happens, you know. You're throwing it at the wall and see if it sticks.
Now, part of talking about women in comics, for you as a young lady cartoonist starting out in the comics, what were some... stuff that was influencing you that got you into comics, because I'm making presumptions here, but came in at a point where it's a boys' game. It still is a boys' game for the most part, but it's slowly changing.
Well, I was actually drawing a lot of my own comics when I was, like, in high school. I mean, they're, like, really awful, you know. That was kind of my chosen storytelling form, but it wasn't until I was in college when I saw things like Women's Comics, which was like this anthology of comics by women with all sorts of storytelling abilities and styles of drawing and so forth. And I think that was probably, it's like, boy, if Aileen Kaminsky can get published, you know, it's like I can get published. So it was very, you didn't have to, like, draw like Jack Kirby or Robert Crumb in order to be able to, you know, let people see stories that you had.
You mean you could draw like a girl?
Oh, yeah, you can draw like anything.
Yeah, I've read a couple stories where you talk about when you first took your work to different Comic-Cons and stuff, and a lot of people were really disparaging just because you are like a woman. Yeah, and it was like very like women's work.
Oh, sure, yeah, but... well, I mean, there's room for everything in this medium. Maybe there's not room for a lot of, let me try to figure out what I'm trying to say here. I mean, you know, there's room for every kind of storytelling and every kind of art, you know. It's up to readers whether or not, you know, they want to support it or not. But I think there's, you know, enough to speak to everybody, and there seem to be enough people to read my comics that... it'd be nice if I could afford to do them full time, which I can't, which is why I have to, like, leave to go to a job. But I definitely feel like there's people waiting for the next thing I have to create, which I'm excited about.
Have you, I noticed sort of in your last issues of Naughty Bits that you were doing a lot of stories that were really word heavy and... I was thinking, wow, Roberta should write a novel, because it seemed like you were getting more into that kind of storytelling. Have you ever considered doing something like that?
I'm in the middle of writing novels. I've got like a, I'm writing a spinoff of My Mother Mountain, which is the Winged People kind of allegory slash fantasy. And not only am I writing it, that's kind of what I've been doing with my time, is I was actually in the process of editing the second. It's a four-novel series. Each novel is about 110,000 words, which is a seriously sized trade paperback novel. And I've got the first one completely finished. It's already, like, it's been sent out to a couple of publishers to look at, and I'm working on this. I'm kind of doing the final edits on the second one. I mean, I worked on it over a kind of a long period of time, because I just don't have, like, you know, weeks to... that I don't have to do anything else to sit down. So I've probably been working on this for like 10 years, but It's kind of, I'm also doing graphic novel slash comic backup stories for it. I'm not quite sure what I'm going to do with it, but I've kind of learned back in the days of doing things like Winging It and some of my other little projects, just to kind of do the work and then sort of worry about who's going to publish it or where it's going to go later. But yeah, it's probably the project nearest to completion I have. Like I say, one is all ready to become a, you know, 250-odd page book when somebody wants to publish it, or when, like, maybe Donna Barr and I get our, you know, get our act together to, like, do kind of a joint publishing venture on it. So that's there. I mean, I've definitely been. It's I'm kind of finding writing, just word writing, is a lot easier than writing and drawing. I mean, there's definitely a way, wonderful way to combine words and pictures. But I mean, I've got a secret for your listeners out there. Writing is easy. You like sit down and monkey words around until they look good, and that's it. You don't have to draw. Like, you come up with a character, and you don't have to, like, you know, practice drawing him at every angle, you know, and so forth. And you just call him Keith, and then you just type in Keith, and you can have Keith doing anything. You don't have to draw. So, oh, it's a piece of cake. Yeah, I've always kind of thought of myself as a writer who draws rather than somebody who draws and writes. I mean, like, y'all know comics, and there's definitely people that are more artists than storytellers, to put it bluntly. And then, yeah. And then there's people that are more storytellers than artists, and some people that really kind of, you know, put them both together really well. And we won't name names, but we can. I'm sure we all have images in our head as I'm saying this. But I kind of consider myself more of a writer who draws. Like, if I'm doing, like, a bitchy story, I'll kind of write the script and maybe put a few little scribbles in. But the dialogue is there before the little layouts of, you know, what she's going to be doing in a panel. But, believe me, I'm, you know, trying to tear myself away from writing and get back to drawing, actually.
Well, it
definitely crossed my mind.
Now, you had a story in the Road Trips anthology that came out, I guess, last year,
oh,
was it?
Yeah, yeah. California Girl.
And that was, I found that interesting. It seemed like it was a different type of story from you.
Really? It was? Like in what way?
I don't know. It was great. I quite enjoyed it. It was just, maybe it's just that it's such a contrast I found to the regular bitchy bitch stuff.
Uh-huh. Well, I think it's kind of along the lines of my little Roberta stories, you know, like the ones that are kind of the backup stories and Naughty Bits. I'm actually kind of working on a little strip with those also. I've got a lot of little projects I'm kind of inching forward. My analogy is like being at a big soccer stadium with a push broom and about 50 beach balls and kind of trying to inch them all across to the goal at one time, which is, you know, kind of doesn't give you a lot of results really fast. But believe me, I'm not just kind of sitting here eating bonbons and looking at the view.
the lovely Seattle skyline.
Oh, actually, I've got a view of the, like, hookers at the bus stop right across. I moved from my little basement apartment to this little urban condo with a interesting view, although somebody else was visiting me, and he looked at it and says, wow, you've got all these really cool people posing for you all the time. I'm going, well, that's another way of looking at it, rather than the, you know, annoying, noisy people at the bus stop. You know, it's some cool urban characters just waiting for me to sketch them. So.
It's the glass half full.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, you gotta think that way.
Now, talking about how you're focusing more on writing now, that kind of brings me to starting out cartooning. Was it something you felt like it was easier to express some of what you were trying to do with the cartooning, and you kind of, like, developed your own writing throughout cartooning?
Oh, gosh, let's see. I guess it's all kind of problem-solving, because, like, my cartoonings always kind of look different. Like, I had, I do my little autobio stories, which are mostly captioned, and the bitchy stories are all, like, dialogue with, like, the scrawly art, and then, like, Winging It, I kind of have dialogue, but, like, no word balloons in a different style, and then there's, like, Sheila and the Unicorns, which is kind of comic strippy, you know, everything in three little panels. So, I think just the kind of idea of storytelling sort of came first, and then I just kind of see what kind of organically seems like the best way to tell the story. Like, for instance, I think I started out, like, Mother Mountain kind of started out this kind of backstory with these kind of two anthropomorphic-looking characters from, you know, And then at one point I just decided, gee, what would this be like if I just wrote this scene? So I sat down and wrote it and went, wow, this is, you know, you can put a whole lot more in that you don't have to draw. And now I'm actually envisioning all kinds of comic, you know, with panels and sequential art and dialogue and so forth, extra story and backstory and so forth for it. So it's now it's kind of evolving back into something that I really hope I have the time to draw, because they're going to be really cool. And, you know, with the magic of computers now, you can, it's a lot easier to color art and get it out to people in color. So, yeah, so like I say, I think it's kind of evolved back into something that I think parts of it would really work well with images. But that's part of not having, that's the good side and the bad side of not being financially dependent on a project, is you can kind of do that. The bad thing is you have to do something else for money and you don't have the time to work on it. So, you know, there's kind of a, you know, there's kind of a good and a bad. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the, like, I was kind of churning out the Naughty Bit stories sort of for deadlines. So that was like kind of another dynamic, is just, okay, what can I come up with to fill a book in, like, you know, 3 or 4 months? But I really do kind of miss having the comic book, just because it was, it's kind of good to have something out so people know that you haven't just, like, died or something.
It would be interesting if, Roberta, if someday you wrote a novel that was partially in comics.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely. Oh, there's so much you can do. It's just, you know, really, I mean, oh, believe me, the possibilities are just boggling. I'm just...
throw a plug for, actually, Phoebe Glockner did the great...
Who did?
Phoebe Glockner's Diary... Confessions of a Teenager... Or Diary of a Teenager?
I don't know.
It's her recent book, and it's like a diary of a teenage girl mixed in with a little bit of cartooning.
Well, also, it's prose cool. And comics, yeah. Like, mixed together. Wow.
I want to see that. That sounds really cool. And of course, if I did it my way, it would definitely be my own unique way of doing it, just like everything else I've been doing.
It would probably be a lot happier than a Phoebe Glockner comic.
Oh, probably.
I wonder whether we could be happy in a place like that.
Was Naughty Bits for you in some way, like you talk about, it's the scrawly stuff, was it kind of like a monkey on your back in a way of kind of like you have this expectation of something you've got to do and it's kind of ending it, kind of like closing like an artistic chapter?
Well, it's kind of yes and kind of no, just because I always would seem to have a deadline that was sort of looming. But on the other hand, like with the latest issues, I really had a variety of... I didn't have to just, like, kind of keep a bitchy storyline going. I mean, there was just such a variety. I could just kind of, ooh, I'm going to do a story about my trip to such and such, or, ooh, I'm going to write about this person that's interesting, or so forth.
Or a really touching story about your cat.
Oh, I know, Muffy, yeah. Actually, I've got another one of my other projects I'm inching forward, which I'd like to plug, are my True Cat Stories. I'm illustrating little 1, 2, and 3 page stories about other people's interesting or very mundane things cats have done.
Oh.
Yeah.
That sounds fabulous.
Kind of along the line of like my Pushkin stories or Muffy stories or that Cat Toons comic that I was selling to help pay for Pushkin's vet bills, which didn't really make much of a dent in the vet bills, but on the other hand, you know, it was something I could get into people's hands.
And everybody that has a cat story for you?
Oh, no kidding. Mm. Oh, believe me. Yeah, trying to figure out how I can kind of quit the day job and just draw cats. I mean, I could definitely just sit and draw cat stories until the end of time, you know, so.
There's always the furry market.
What's that?
There's always the furry market.
Oh, well, I'm not sure furry people would, because these are just like regular cats, you know, like your cat. It's not like, you know, Catman goes to the mall and, you know.
Yeah, Roberta would have to wear like a cat suit when she sold her cat comics to the furry market.
Not really the tail, yeah. I don't know. I'm not sure if it's quite aimed at the furry market, but you never know, you know.
You know what I always appreciated about the Bitchy Bitch stories and a lot of your other work is that you're, like, the kind of feminist outlook of it is really unabashed. Like, I find these days that a lot of women are just sort of secretly feminists, or, like, feminist has become, like, a bad word, and I don't agree with that, and I'm always like, well, I'm a feminist, and I always really appreciated that you, you know, even though Bitchy Bitch herself is not a feminist,
right,
you still had
yeah.
a feminist approach to mm-hmm. her stories, which I really appreciated.
I completely do not get that at all. I mean, you know, if it weren't for feminists, I mean, women wouldn't be voting. Women wouldn't be doing, like, 90% of the things women are doing. You know, it's just sort of... And I guess it's like sort of more of the right-wing disinformation or something.
Well, there's definitely a huge element of that, and I just laughed because we had that exact same conversation on our way here in the car.
Oh, really?
Yeah, about, you know, where would we be without the suffragette movement, and what kind of world would it be now, right? And then there's, like, women that think that it's over and, you know, we're... everything's equal now, and just like, could you just shut up about it? And that really makes me crazy too.
Oh, definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, I'm not a feminist, but I believe in birth control, and I believe that women should be able to work, and women should be able to, like, you know, get loans and buy houses, and, you know, not get fired from their job because they're no longer 36 or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, what, you know.
But I'm not a feminist.
Yeah, yeah, feminists there, they hate men, and, you know, they don't wear bras, and I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean, there's probably a lot of women who don't identify themselves as feminists who hate men. You know? So, probably most women who hate men aren't the last to call themselves feminists, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I could say something about it.
Ah, it's Canada, so go
women,
ahead.
Women who have to put up with them, they're the yeah. Yeah, but yeah, don't get me started.
Oh.
Yeah, that would probably be a whole episode, radio episode in itself. Is, you know, are you a feminist and why or why not? Yeah. I think Donna Barr. I think Donna Barr had a definition of what is a feminist. It's like, if you vote, you're a feminist. If not, you're a hypocrite. You know. Yeah.
Now, do you see? Like, going through the Naughty Bits, you really had an interest in other comics. Have you noticed kind of finding a lot of like-minded creators since, like, kind of stepping forward and going, here, I'm doing this type of comic, check it out?
Maybe not now, but, like, when Naughty Bits actually was being published, people would send me their comics that looked like I had definitely inspired them, you know, which I think is really cool. To be honest, I'm not really, in the last few years, I haven't really been following comics that much. I mean, it's every time I, you know, turn around, there's like, you know, I go to the comic conventions. I mean, there's just, I'm just bombarded with all this, like, gorgeous stuff. I mean, it just seems like there's this, you know, renaissance of different kinds of, like, storytelling and beautifully produced volumes and just all kinds of art. And I'm just hoping that there's more people that are actually, like, you know, not afraid to read them in public. you know, a corresponding amount of what? How about you folks? I mean, would that be your opinion, or do you think there's more readers than there were, say, 10 years ago, or more people that would identify themselves?
I think it's a different market now. I think comics have definitely kind of taken a more, I don't want to use the term, like, intelligent turn.
Yeah.
But there's definitely, like, a different outlook at modern alternative comics.
Maybe more intellectual.
Yes.
Yeah, more. I think so. Yeah, actually, like, Art Spiegelman, he's going to be at Benaroya Hall, which is, like, the big, like, concert hall here in Seattle, like, Monday. I mean, it's, like, $20, and I can't afford to see him, you know, because I don't have 20 extra dollars to see him with. But I'm sure he'll have some, you know, highbrow things to say. But, oh, yeah, I get the Publishers Weekly, you know, it's like bulletins, and I think a couple of days ago it's like, you know, I guess graphic novels are really kind of the way to go right now. So
yeah,
I think by the time I get my bitchy graphic novel finished that, you know, that'll still be the case, because some things seem to go in loops.
I can't help but suspect that if Art Spiegelman knew you wanted to go to his lecture, that he could swing you a ticket. I'm pretty confident he's not unfamiliar with your work.
Oh, probably not. Yeah, it's like a slideshow. I think I actually saw it when he put it on at the Moore Theater. He did about, I think about 4 or 5 years ago, I think he was here, which is definitely a different, you know, less fancy venue than Benaroya Hall. But I'll see. Maybe I'll save up and.
I don't want to get off the topic of you, but is it his Comics 101 lecture that he's doing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't even know what that is.
No, I've seen that. It's a great lecture. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like I said, I think I saw it at the Moore Theater. Although I'm sure it's quite updated. You know, because I think he's been doing it for a while. I think.
He has some new material that he's been publishing in academic journals.
Yeah. Oh, I bet. Yeah. Oh, foo. Maybe I guess I can always write it off as a business expense.
It's networking.
That's a totally legitimate tax write-off.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
And
definitely.
Plus your snack after, you can also write off.
Sure. Oh, okay. Oh, maybe you're talking me into it. Okay. Yeah.
just send all your accountant stuff to Robin Constabaris, the...
No,
you'll take care of all the filing.
I have a great accountant who I got hooked up with through Ian Boothby, and he totally told me that stuff is completely legitimate. But you can't write off your friend's snack, just your own.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, that's quite all right, yeah. Oh, they're probably Canadian, though.
Like, yeah, that's true. It's dollars, completely different tax laws. Mm-hmm. So my advice to you is... not to be taken as this is not professional advice, it's just my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
Now, some of the projects you're talking about, are you planning on doing some self-publishing or shopping it out? Because you've done self-publishing in the past, if I'm...
Oh, yeah. I'm toying with self-publishing. Like, Donna Barr, she's published some of her own books, print on demand and so forth, and we've been in the rudimentary stages of maybe, you know, between the two of us, we can actually, you know, but .. that's kind of as far as that's going, you know. I don't want to, like, jinx anything. But it's definitely, I mean, self-publishing is so much easier today than it was, like, you know, back when I was self-publishing, you know, graphic novels and such. So I think that's definitely a possibility. I mean, you know, there's, you know, 10 years ago, didn't have the internet like you do. You didn't have, like, print-on-demand, so you can, like, kind of crank things out cheaply until, you know, you see if, you know, or get the first edition out and catch all the typos and then, you know, print the second edition hot on its heels. So there's lots of possibilities. And, you know, there's good and bad with having regular publishers. You know, I'm sure Fantagraphics, they'd probably be interested in the fitchy graphic novel I'm working on, you know. But, like I say, I'm... trying right now, I'm more interested in actually getting the work done than sort of, you know, worrying about where it's going to go. I mean, if, you know, if I get somebody interested, then that would definitely be an incentive to get one of the projects finished. But I'm sure everything I do, you know, once it gets done, is going to be readily available to people. So that's kind of the least of my concerns. I'd like to kind of leave that sort of more up to fate and what unfolds and so forth. But you know, I mean, to anybody out there, I mean, there's always ways to get anything you're interested in doing, you know, to people, to readers. So there's just like a wealth of opportunity. there's not, unfortunately, I'm not finding like an endless amount of time to sit down and actually like crank out pages. So I've got to get better on my time management, I think, or win the lottery, or both.
I think it always seems like you're not really getting much done, but if you kind of look back at how, like, you've already, even if you never did any more work, you've already done, like, this giant mountain of work.
Oh, I know. Believe me, I'm sitting here in my room kind of looking at the piles of original art right here, you know. Definitely. Yeah, I think when Naughty Bits was still coming out, I think I was maybe getting out, you know, 3 a year or something, and people kept saying they thought it was like, you know, every other month, and I'm going, you got to be kidding, you know, but the perception, it's like this sort of like, you know, creative bulimia or something, or anorexia, where, you know, what you see in the mirror is not what, you know, what you see out of the mirror.
Even like 3 times a year is a major accomplishment. I mean, I think it takes most cartoonists a year to 18 months to get out an issue.
Oh, I know. It's like, you know, I guess it depends on, like, how much detail they put in their art and, like, how much creative time they have and whether they have a full-time job or something. But it's, I mean, it's tremendously, I mean, I talk to people that are just, like, regular artists, like people that do paintings, and, you know, they're just floored. I mean, I start talking seriously about comics, and it's like, well, how do you know, like, where to put the words and where to put the pictures and, you know, all those drawings? And what if you don't like one of the drawings? What do you do? And, you know, it's just... Yeah, I mean, we're amazing.
Yeah, it's so labor-intensive.
It's like one of those things, if you really sit down and think about it, it's almost too intimidating to, you know. Yeah, those pages do add up after a while. You know, you kind of crank out enough panels originally, or eventually they kind of start putting themselves together, and, you know, then you can put the end at the back. But, yeah.
Going back to, you know, women in comics, I'm going to keep
getting back on
the International Women's Day flavor. Did you find a lot of women coming to you at conventions, like being like, you know, not really into it, but I read this, I was blown away, because my little quick anecdote is at work, you know, not a lot of people read comics, and they found I read comics, like, oh yeah, I read some, and then these two female coworkers were like, man, do you know anything about Naughty Bits? That was like the best comic ever.
Wow.
And it was
cool.
Just like... these two, and they just, like, loved it so much, and it's, like, neat that, like, it really had such an effect on them. In comparison to other comics, they'd be like, eh, yeah, whatever, yeah, it's all kind of, you know, a bunch of boys being boy comics, and it was just more personal, and it's, I don't know. Have you, does that sound familiar?
Oh, sure. Well, what I'm doing is I am, like, writing and drawing the comics and writing and drawing the novels and stuff that I would like to see that nobody else is doing. I mean, this bitchy bitch, I mean, you know, Mother Mountain, all this winging it, all this other stuff. This is like, you know, me. I mean, this is like what I would just love to pick up and go. I would just love to be able to go into a comic shop and here's the new Naughty Bits. Oh, this is, you know, and pick it up and read it. And, you know, well, what's, oh my gosh, here's a story where Roberta did this. And here's Bitchy Bitch and all my, you know, and is there a letter page? No, well, maybe next issue. And, yeah, I'm kind of writing everything I would like to be able to, in, I guess, an alternate universe, you know, go to a store and pick up. And I'm sort of envisioning Mother Mountain as the, like, sort of feature-length animated cartoon that will never be made in this world because the subject matter is, like, so creepy or whatever, you know, but I can dream count it. But that's pretty much my creative secret, which is why I'm, you know, probably not making a fabulous living off of what I do. It's just me, you know.
Well, I think it's interesting that, you know, working a comic store in the past, and people do the old, you know, what's a comic, you know, a girl would like, and it's always... The examples they always pull are like something like Strangers in Paradise, or where there's these false creations of these like stereotype expectations.
I've never really read much of that. I mean, I think I read the first couple of issues, and then like the story went off into some kind of gangster story or something,
it's
kind of lost me, you know.
It's some nice artwork, but there's something lacking. But what I'm kind of going towards is that, you know, like I show like with my own girlfriend to find the stuff that she really likes. It's the stuff that's, like, the most honest stuff like your work or, like, Mary Fleener.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Real, like, kind of real life, which kind of comes back to the women's comics, because a lot of the women's comics were, like, sort of kind of real life stories, you know. Because, you know, Bitchy, her story is kind of a lot of our stories, you know. Yeah, I really try to, you know, I guess I'm not really trying. I guess, again, it's, I'm just sort of doing what I want to read, and it's comics that are, like, very kind of reader-friendly, you know, not somebody just, like, going off on a rant or something or doing something that's just not enjoyable or not entertaining or not, you know. Yeah, I love stories that, you know, you read it again and you go, whoa, I never noticed it, and then you kind of, you know, find all these little things that kind of hook together in kind of a cool way, or these little backstories you didn't see the first time, or little things going on in the background. I mean, I love things like this, but to be honest, I do not find a lot of other comics that kind of, I mean, I, you know, this, don't take this wrong, but I definitely find myself reading my stuff over and over again.
You know what,
damn,
Roberta?
Damn, I wish somebody else would write this besides me. You know, it gets tiring after a while. And what happens when I'm gone? You know, like, will somebody take over, or will there be this big void, you know?
I've actually read a lot of your stuff over and over again, too.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I think it holds up, yeah.
It totally holds up. Like, it's still just as entertaining, and I hate to say it, but I think a lot of people relate to Bitchy's, like, inner dialogue.
Oh, sure, yeah. Oh, heck, yeah.
She's the Bitchy in all of us.
Oh, sure, yeah. No kidding. Yeah.
Boys have Bitchy, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, boys can be Bitchy. Oh, boys can be very Bitchy, yeah. Oh, I still laugh out loud. Boy, that scene where, you know, Bitchy's on vacation, she suddenly realized she had sex with Kenny, you know, it's like, oh, man, yeah. I'll laugh myself sick over that. Haven't we been there? It's like, oh, my God. You know, him. Yeah.
And then you check into Alcoholics Anonymous.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, it's, well, like I said, I mean, as much as agonizing as it is to, like, sort of hammer enough hours together to sit down and work, I really enjoy, like, doing it. So hopefully that is what people are kind of picking up on.
Well, we enjoy reading it.
Oh, thank you. Well, like I say, there's more coming. It isn't, might not be finished yet, but it's getting hammered together slowly. Like I say, just think of the soccer stadium with all the colorful beach balls and little Roberta about three quarters of the way, you know, like across it, or no, I guess about a quarter of the way across it with her, you know, pushing those little balls forward. So eventually one of them's going to, maybe the Mother Mountain novel or something is going to be at the goalpost and y'all could read it.
And then hopefully there will be no, like, gusts of wind going the other way.
Yeah.
Oh, Robin. Just a couple more questions.
Oh,
I realize
sure.
We're getting pretty close to two.
Uh-huh. Oh, I can stay a little longer, I guess. Yeah.
Your artistic tutelage? How did you learn?
Oh, I just drew until it didn't look bad anymore. You mean artwork?
Yeah, your learning process.
Oh, like I say, I think just kind of drawing and then going back later and going, God, this looks horrible, you know, and then kind of doing it again and trying to say, I had I think I studied art in college, but I always did really badly in the classes. I mean, you know, like before I took art classes, when I was taking all the, like, the history and whatever, I was getting straight A's, and then once I started taking art classes, I kept getting, like, C's in them, you know, so I don't know if I really learned much, definitely didn't learn how to do assignments that you'd get good grades on, but I was always, and I'd always go home and, like, draw comics, so then it kind of dawned on me that maybe I should just kind of forget trying to be an artist and just do comics instead, so.
Roberta Gregory, A+ in comics.
Oh, definitely. Aww. Yeah. So let me think. I'm trying to figure out if there's another way. I'm assuming this is going to be like it. See, this is why I don't want to do a live interview, because, like, there's too much stuff to like, too many. But besides the fact that I'll be at work processing absentee ballots on International Women's Day, but oh, let's see. Yeah, I guess I sort of had formal training, but I guess I would say that the way I learned to draw is just sort of keep
just
drawing until it, you know, doesn't look as bad anymore.
You know, that's really the only way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only way to learn how to draw.
Oh, man, yeah. there's stuff that's in print now that I wish I could track down every copy and burn it, but, you know, that's part of it also, you know.
Now, you were mentioning earlier you use computers for coloring now, and I know a lot of artists are handicapped by computers.
Oh, I'm barely learning. I think like last year I sort of learned how to put dialogue into word balloons, and then I think I forgot again. You know?
Oh, forget that, please. For the sake of all that is hand rendered.
Well, this little project I did, it was like a little, one of those Jack Chick Bible tracts saying that God doesn't really hate gay people, you know, and I, you know, it has like bad computer lettering, so I wanted to make it look like it. So, you know, I mean, I don't know if I would really do that with my real captions, but I wanted to learn how to do it, and somebody showed me how to do it, and I think I forgot, so somebody's going to have to show me how to do it again, but. I think I'm definitely one of those people that's kind of handicapped by computers. But on the other hand, I like the color effects, so this is my year to learn that, I hope.
Now, if, say, a listener is interested in purchasing any stuff, do you have things available on your website?
Oh, you bet. That'd be great. RobertaGregory.com, which is pretty easy. And, I think almost all the issues of Naughty Bits, except for the few that are sold out, are still available. And, you know, all my weird... self-published stuff and real cat tunes and there's all kinds of things you can get off my website. Oh, please do. I mean, the more people buy off my website, the less days they have to go in and set up chairs at the opera or whatever.
Now you're talking about originally your mountains of original art. Do you archive at all, or are you a seller of original?
Oh, I've got stacks of the stuff. It's people. There's a page that people particularly like. It's probably around here somewhere. I can probably dig it up and let them have it, so they can have their very own sweated over by Roberta page of Bitchy Bitch. So, yeah, I'm looking at some stacks here under the drawing table, and there's the painting for the cover of issue number 30. That's sitting on top. So, the stuff just doesn't go away by itself.
Do you work in a bit of a storm of things just everywhere?
I'd say it's kind of an organized chaos. I mean, I can find things. I mean, it might take a while, but my space is very limited. I've got like two kind of small. I used to have a whole house to myself, or the whole bottom half of a house and a garage, and I've got like two rooms. So I'm a little more compact and little tidier, but it works. Like I say, it's not the facilities so much as the time management, which is like my sore spot right now.
I'm going to continue with the questions about your creative process. What kind of tools do you use for drawing?
Let's see. The Bitchy Bitch comics, the ones from Naughty Bits, those were done with Rotring art pens. They're like these calligraphy and drawing pens which you fill with ink. And I've also kind of, some other little projects like my cat tunes, I'm starting to use those disposable pens like the little Pigma pens that come in different circumferences. They're handy because you can sort of use them on the road and use them in tight locations and so forth. So yeah, I don't think they last very long. I think probably after a few years, the lines are going to start to fade on them. So I don't know if I would even technically be able to call that like original art, but something that is really kind of meaningful, like the Bitchy stories, I definitely want to do with the like ink pens. But that's basically just used for convenience. I'm sort of trying to use like dip in ink pens just to do like artwork with, but it's been a long time since I've done that, and I'm kind of going more towards convenience.
I think I'm going to wrap it up because I have to go to work, too.
Oh, dear, yeah. That sucks, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah.
I'm a little hungover today, and I have a long shift ahead of me.
Well, just let people know that there's many, many things coming for me, one of my projects is to update my website also. I've got a web guy that doesn't update it very often, so it's there's more going on than that there actually is. I've like illustrated like a couple of books for people and so forth. I mean, there's lots of things I've done that just very few people know about.
Little pockets of stuff here and there.
Oh yeah, little pockets of projects. Yeah, I think I did a bunch of I think I'm illustrating a book right now. This guy hasn't gotten back to me about it yet. You know, I've kind of done the drawings, but I'm not sure if he's going to use them. And so he wants me to do a coloring book. So there's all kinds of little things that kind of keep coming up. But, there are big projects on the horizon.
Well, I'm looking forward to your next beach ball.
Oh, definitely. Once it hits the goalpost. me too, believe me.
Now, are you going to be at the Emerald City Comic Con in Seattle?
I'm not sure if I'm going to be there officially. I might be there with. I mean, I didn't get a table or anything. I might be there with Cartoonist Northwest because that's the local comics group that I belong to. It's the weekend before Easter, right?
It's March.
I don't even know when it is.
31st, April 1st.
Oh yeah, I think that's the weekend before Easter. Yeah. I'm not sure if I'll be officially there, but if I'm there, I'd be with Cartoonist Northwest. Y'all going?
I'm
going
to be there.
Oh, cool.
So
okay.
I look forward to meeting you.
Oh, definitely. Well, give me a call you've got my number, so, you know, if you don't see me there, give me a call anyway.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Roberta. It was a delight.
I hope I gave you useful information and there wasn't too much static on the phone.
Oh, no, it was excellent. You really gave us some really great stuff.
Oh, great. Okay.
Like I said, we're both big fans of your work and look forward to some more stuff coming out.
Oh, thank you. Oh, believe me, I look forward to seeing more work from me. Nobody looks forward to seeing more work from me than me, that's for darn sure.
Well, that, you know what? And that's great because a lot of people don't really enjoy looking at their own
work. Oh, I lost you in the static. What was that again?
I say a lot of people don't really enjoy looking at their own work, and I think that's good that you like your own stuff. It just bugs me when people are like, oh yeah, I did that book, and it's like,
oh well, like I say, it's what I want to read. nobody else is really doing it, so I guess it's
that's what makes it great though. You're doing something you want to read and other people want to read it too.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Roberta.
Okie doke.
Have a good day.
Thanks, you too.
Bye.
Bye.
Don't fear me, but you can win this song. Fred Durst?
He's like Iggy.
Oh, you are sorely mistaken. I
play something from $3 Bill, y'all.
What is that?
That's the landmark Limp Bizkit album.
Limp Bizkit? Oh my God! I mean,
wait, you don't agree that those are the most crucial grooves you've heard since Funkadelic?
What, Limp Bizkit grooves? Yeah, absolutely.
It's like
know.
The ultimate cross between Funkadelic and Rob Tyner.
Yeah, no, I don't agree at all.
Oh, you do not deserve a radio show. CITR.